Welcome to the Background Briefing podcast. Many children with disabilities are being let down by the education system. A national survey by the peak body Children with Disability Australia found one in four children with disabilities has been turned away from a school, and more than two-thirds of the parents surveyed said their children were not adequately supported at school. The rise in autism and behavioural disorders is straining the resources of mainstream and special schools, and some long-standing practices in special education schools are also being questioned. In Victoria, there's been hostility and tension, with dozens of accusations and formal complaints about schools. Anne Arnold follows the story of autistic twins Jake and Cooper and finds serious shortfalls in the schooling options for children with disabilities.
Hello.
Hi.
My daughter broke some glass, so I'm just, I'm just vacuuming today.
It's 8 a.m. in the Woolley household in the outer Melbourne suburb of Narre Warren South. Rachel Woolley is calmly managing her seven children.
Hi, Jake.
Green days.
Said good thanks.
Peace at school.
The oldest kids in the Woolley family are 11-year-old twins, Jake and Cooper. Both boys have severe autism with limited speech. They're about to head off to school with younger siblings Dylan and Amber, and 4-year-old Scarlett's coming along for the ride. The 1-year-old twin girls are staying put with their grandmother.
My name is Scarlett.
Football in the head isn't good when you're a little baby, is it?
Violet's
going to stay here.
Violet's going to stay here.
Violet's
not coming.
The Woolley's single-storey brick house is in a maze of cul-de-sacs in Melbourne's southeast growth corridor.
And what's your school you're pointing to? Kilberry Valley, yeah?
Miss Abbott.
Is that your teacher?
Yes, Miss Bates.
Around the country, schools are buckling under the strain of more and more children with diagnoses such as autism and behavioural disorders. The number of students with diagnosed disabilities increased by 42% over the 10 years to 2013. The vast majority of Australians with diagnosed autism are under the age of 20. Hello, I'm Anne Arnold and this is Background Briefing. Schools are frequently just not geared for kids like Jake and his twin Cooper.
Cooper! I'm Anne Cooper.
Oh, no, that's Jake. Wait, what? Why? Why is Jake happy? Where's your bird?
Was that Cooper language?
The other day, Jake got up on the shed and he was talking to the neighbours next door in his own language, and they couldn't understand him, and they yelled out to my other son, Dylan, "What's he saying?" He goes, "He's talking autism." Oh, it was cute.
Rachel, does Jake have to do his teeth?
Yes.
Jake?
Some mainstream schools turn away or simply discourage children with disabilities. If they do enrol them, the schools often don't have the necessary expertise. The alternative, schools specifically for children with disabilities, can fall way short. Before switching to a mainstream primary school, Jake and Cooper lost years of their education and development, their mother believes, in a special school. And Jake in particular was traumatised there.
He would pull down his roller shutter in his bedroom and he'd turn the light off and he would go into his room and he'd sit there in the dark on his own. It was heartbreaking. He didn't want to go to school. He was stripping his clothes off, saying, "No school, no school." He didn't want to be there. I'd have to try and force him in the car and take him to school, and he'd be taking his clothes off in the car on the way to the school.
Today there are no objections about going to their current school where they've been for 3 years.
Where are we going, boys?
School.
And
Is there assembly today?
Not so.
When's assembly?
I think I have assembly today. Should we not say?
Assembly not today. When's assembly?
Where are we going?
Mama, love you.
Love you too, Scarlett.
Rachel Woolley's two eldest sons each have a combination of diagnoses.
Severe autism, it's on a spectrum, and for them I would say that they have very limited speech communication. They also have problems with gross motor and a learning delay, but they also have an intellectual disability with their autism.
A new national survey just released by the peak body Children with Disabilities Australia found that one in four children with disabilities have been refused entry to a school because the school did not believe it could cater to their needs. Over 1,000 families from across Australia responded to the survey. More than two-thirds of them believe their children were not adequately supported at school. It's a system in crisis, says the CEO of Children with Disabilities Australia, Stephanie Gottlieb, and it's wearing families down.
We see families that are just exasperated through having to advocate vigilantly, continuously, to ensure not only good educational outcomes, but just access to education. And it's not right. You know, you see families and their life is consumed by it. Or the other scenario that we often see is families sadly just see it as part of the lot of having a student with a disability, where your child goes to school and is just looked after. Kids go to school to learn.
Stephanie Gottlieb is herself a parent of two children with disabilities.
Do you want to tell Dad your email?
What was your email?
Let's have a look. Well, I'll just find it and we'll show Dad, okay? Here we go. What does this say, Adam?
Hello, Mum. I love you. We're nice. Ever eat drink of water, coffee. Mum is picking up from school, love from Adam, happy.
Yeah, it made me happy, didn't it, when I got it? Thank you.
Thank you.
Adam and his brother Danny receive individual funding from the Victorian government. The boys take that funding to their mainstream high school, which their mother says has a strongly inclusive approach. However, many students around Australia are either insufficiently funded or not at all. The Australian Education Union has estimated that 100,000 students with disabilities receive no additional funding. In March, the AEU joined up with Stephanie Gottlieb and Children for Disability Australia to lead a delegation of families to Canberra to lobby politicians for better educational resourcing. The federal government provides funding and the states distribute it. Stephanie Gottlieb.
Students can't miss out while governments work out who's going to pay for it. That's why we went to Canberra. This needs to be a priority because there's a whole generation of kids that are going to be fast-tracked to welfare and be unemployable unless the education system markedly improves and has the reform it needs to provide these children with the quality education that is their right.
In the federal budget, the pool of money for the states to allocate to students with disabilities was increased from $1.2 to $1.3 billion. But the Australian Education Union says it still doesn't address the unmet need. In Victoria, there's been growing hostility and tension, with dozens of accusations and formal complaints being made about schools.
The sad thing is it often starts with parents asking for a particular program or a support. They might need speech pathology, they might need the assistance of an aide, they might need a number of things. And so they will often start by requesting those things.
Julie Phillips is an independent advocate who helps parents of children with disabilities take legal action over their education. She's the manager of Melbourne's Disability Discrimination Legal Service, but she mostly advocates as a volunteer. Julie Phillips has been involved in 37 legal cases over the past 9 years. She doesn't apologise for upsetting people, mostly from the Victorian Department of Education, by taking them to court.
Unfortunately, the process takes so long that often by the time it reaches the end, the student has finished school and it's all too late and they've left school with little education or no education whatsoever, and their lives are absolutely ruined. And so then it comes down to damages, because that's all that's left. because they've left. So again, this is entirely unsatisfactory, and for a state government, it's an appalling way to approach the education of kids with disabilities.
Sometimes parents get lucky. Rachel Woolley found Kilberry Valley Primary School in Melbourne's Hampton Park. This is a mainstream primary school that has made a point of developing special needs education skills. There are over 800 kids in the school, and in the space of 4 years, the number of children with disabilities has grown from 8 to 64.
Hey, Jay.
Bye.
Where's my kiss?
Goodbye, Pisa.
Can you put your bag on your back properly, please?
Bye. No, thank you. Bye. See you next week.
Jake's getting a bit agitated about me coming into the school with my microphone and headphones. It's not what he's used to. Teachers and schools are often ill-equipped to manage challenging behaviours. This problem became very public when it was reported in April that a school in Canberra had built a cage from pool fencing at the back of a classroom to contain an autistic boy. Other stories have been emerging about controversial behaviour management approaches in schools. In the same month, there was a Channel 7 news item about a West Australian school.
A student is dragged across the floor, held by his ankles. He's screaming, repeatedly pleading for his shoe. The adult and the student are inside the room for 18 seconds. She appears to use her foot to kick something blocking the door. The child then appears to be locked inside.
The West Australian Education Department is investigating that incident. And the Canberra classroom cage in a school which is not being publicly identified is also being investigated. It's widely agreed that there's insufficient training of school staff. The Australian Education Union has told Background Briefing it will be calling for the teaching of students with disabilities to be a compulsory part of teacher training courses. But there have long been so-called special schools whose purpose is to educate children with disabilities. Questions are mounting about how some of them operate.
Hi guys, what's the weekend hold for you? What's happening?
Not much.
Not much, just relaxing.
Yes. And what I've been talking about you, Lizzie. What have you been doing?
Just finishing off my daily duties by folding the flags and taking them down.
And I'm the Emerson School drummer, best ever pro.
I would say I'd agree. Yeah.
Pro.
John Mooney is the principal of Emerson School in Dandenong. It's for students with mild intellectual disabilities. He spoke to Background Briefing as a representative of the Victorian Principals Association of Specialist Schools. There have been allegations of inappropriate restraint and seclusion against several Victorian special schools.
There have been controversies over the last couple of years about a couple of schools in particular, Monash SDS, Specialist Development School, and Marnebeck. And there have certainly been issues raised by parents at a couple of other schools as well. One common theme is restraint. What's your understanding of what is permissible and acceptable there?
Well, first of all, I have a very high regard for my colleagues that work in education, and I am actively involved and in a whole lot of ways. And the two schools that you mention, I have a very, very high regard for. Okay, so in terms of restraint, first of all, dignity and respect are what it's all about. So therefore, if someone is behaving in a way as to call a danger to themselves, a danger to others, and then lose, the main thing is they lose their dignity and respect. We have to do that. So in terms
but is
of,
it giving dignity and respect to have someone harnessed in?
There needs to be an arrangement and a collaboration and an agreement about these things. And if there's not, then obviously the educational place there is not the best place for a parent to place their child.
Principals agree that at every school there will be parents who are happy and those who are not. Here at Kilberry Valley Primary in Melbourne's outer southeast, Jake Woolley settled in well. His mother Rachel came into the school for the first time in a while. And there were a few surprises. Like many autistic children, Jake has had a tendency to abscond.
He's excited. So this is sort of amazing for you to see him just playing in the playground with all the other kids.
Yeah, without someone right beside him and him not
wanting to take off, or he's playing and he's interacting, and I haven't seen this.
No, it's good.
This is good. Because usually you'd have someone like right there on him all the time. But now he's really growing, I think.
The principal of Kilberry Valley Primary, Neil Cunningham, says in one sense it's not such a stretch for his school to incorporate the growing number of children with disabilities who often have communication problems. Over half the 840 students are from backgrounds where English is not their first language.
Predominantly Sri Lankan and Indian. The Afghani population is growing, and we have quite a bit of Islander population increasing as well. But I think one of the bonuses of our school community is the diversity. We have people with their hijabs and their turbans and so forth, and that's just normal. Nobody questions that. And similarly, you know, people just see, you know, some of the boys that you've been looking at this morning, they're just a bit different.
All right, if no one else has got any forms or money or lunch orders, we will head out for sport. Make sure you grab your hats because we're still in hat time.
Office people, please.
And you still got to do your lap. Remember, do your lap at the Oval.
Sport.
Sport now, Jake.
Tisa. Matcha bakewells.
Playground for me?
Yes.
Playground later.
I've got Jake. I'll see you later. I'm going to talk to Mr. Cunningham.
Jake and Cooper, when they came, they weren't social and they struggled to communicate, couldn't write, and basically were really struggling, had a lot of behavioural traits, you know, on a social thing. See, we look at, in 5 years' time, would the behaviour that they are exhibiting now, would that be acceptable, you know, if they're out at the football or out at the whatever. And we work on those type of things with the parents. And I might add to, I really want to strongly, but none of this works without total parent backing.
There's also a huge commitment of resources by the school. Using funding that each child with a diagnosed disability brings with them, this school now employs 40 teachers' aides, or education support workers.
You met Anne this morning, Cooper, didn't you?
How are we going to say happy birthday? Like, who's them? Happy!
Do you like pizza?
Yes.
We roll. We pat. Look at this big pizza. We toss. We put the pizza pie in the oven.
He's by Robert Raven.
Good boy. Look at the meat.
Meat.
Does it look nice?
Yes.
Lunch is busy. Oh my goodness, look at those big tummies.
All of the aides have a book and they keep records of exactly the type of things that the students are doing.
This is a very different school experience for Cooper and Jake. Their previous school was a special school called Marnebeck. It had two divisions. Children were placed according to IQ test results. Their mother Rachel says the twins' allocation to the lower IQ division was the first setback.
I think that their education went stale. It was a babysitting service and they weren't learning any academics. In the environment that my children were in, it's supposed to be an individual learning plan, but they never received an individual learning plan. They taught the entire class as a whole. So especially with my children, if they were stuck on something or they couldn't do something and they needed a lot of one-on-one support, they would just sit there. If they sat there and they couldn't do something, then the behaviours would start. So especially with Jake, he'd start to act up and they didn't then know how to deal with that. So it was just a vicious circle that went around.
Rachel says her boys did not receive an individual learning plan. The school has said there were plans for all students. But Rachel says if they did exist for her boys, they weren't followed. Learning plans are critical, according to disability education advocate Julie Phillips.
There could be a range of specific individual strategies that they need. And unless everyone understands what they are, is on the same page from teacher to teacher, and knows how to measure their progress, that's going to be a real problem.
Julie Phillips says individual learning plans can be seriously inadequate. She showed Background Briefing plans that were vague or simply listed tasks for parents to do at home.
And I've looked at hundreds and hundreds of these individual education plans, and nearly all of them are as appalling as the others for different reasons. So what we've got here is one plan which is entitled an individual learning plan, but it's actually the minutes of a meeting. And then at the end it has four dot points, which are the learning goals. And two of them are really the responsibility of the home. One of them is to practice timetables, and the other is to learn individual spelling words from a list. So there's no strategies, there's no measurable outcomes.
While individual learning plans are commonplace and recommended by the Victorian Department of Education, they are not mandatory. Background Briefing has been told by a source in special education that the plans are not audited and principals are not required to sign off on them. So there is no systematic quality control. The department, in a statement, said that learning plans are the responsibility of the student support group that exists for each student receiving disability funding. Julie Phillips says the department, in not insisting on good quality learning plans, is failing both children and teachers.
The people at the very top who are overseeing this very important area are failing, in my opinion, in their duty to support teachers to know what they're doing.
She says there has to be accountability if a child's potential is to be reached.
By refusing to measure it and by refusing to put in formal programs, that will ensure that the child will never reach it.
Some disability educators would say, look, there's always going to be a cohort of parents who either are never going to be happy with anything or they are really starry-eyed about their child's capabilities and potential and they're way off the mark and they just don't want to hear that from us. And so they blame us when they don't see their child progressing a lot.
Well, look, that might be true. Some parents might be like that. But you can bet on one thing for sure. If you have an educational plan with no strategies, or if you have an educational plan with no measurable goals, or you don't attempt to put in a formal program for someone who's going behind, then I would say that the teachers are going to be in exactly the same position as the parents, in that they will simply not know what the potential of that child is.
Julie Phillips, a volunteer legal advocate for students with disabilities. Rachel Woolley, the mother of twins Jake and Cooper, says that over 2.5 years at their special school, they rarely received the allied health support that is supposed to be available, such as speech therapy.
I think they received maybe, I think in the time that they were there, a handful of one-on-one support from the specialist teams.
And did that include a speech pathologist?
They did employ a speech pathologist, but she would show the teacher what to do and then the teacher in turn would do it as a group session. But most of the sessions that were done there were done on a group basis. They had a lot of children in the school and they weren't able to provide one-on-one support.
Speech, or the lack of it, is one of the biggest barriers to adequate education and to assessing a child's abilities.
The biggest group that's likely to be overlooked is probably kids with autism.
Rosemary Crosley has been working with children and adults with little or no speech for nearly 40 years. She rose to fame in the 1970s and 80s when she championed the cause of Anne McDonald, a girl with cerebral palsy and a fine mind who had literally been withering in an institution for most of her young life. Anne then lived with Rosemary and her partner and attained 2 university degrees. Anne McDonald died 5 years ago at the age of 49. These days, Rosemary Crosley says, it's the growing numbers of children with autism who are slipping under the radar.
The basic issue is that anybody who's got little or no functional speech should be seen by somebody who's expert in non-speech communication, and that's not being done.
She is particularly concerned about the lack of action in some special schools, which are meant to be catering to special needs.
There are some exceptional schools who've tapped into the resources out there and are doing a really amazing job. But most of the special developmental schools that I know about are appalling.
How do you know that?
I know it because of what I see if I go in there, but I also know it because of their total reluctance to allow their students to use communication aids, the appalling shortage of therapy services for the students.
Rosemary Crosley runs a small not-for-profit service teaching non-speech communication.
As a matter of course, whenever a new client comes to see us, we ask their parents what therapy resources they are accessing. And a typical answer for a child with no speech would be one session lasting half an hour of speech therapy in his class with six other children every fortnight. That enables the school to tick a box. It is inconceivable that a meaningful service or remotely useful service is provided in those circumstances.
For twins Jake and Cooper Woolley, not only was there insufficient professional support, their mother Rachel says in their former school, the advice they did get was disastrous.
They employed a behavioural specialist, she wasn't actually a trained psychologist, to come out and help Jake, who had challenging behaviours. And her suggestions for dealing with them and what she told the teachers were barbaric. She suggested that when Jake was misbehaving, that he was to be put into time out. Their time out was a time out room where children were shut into a room with a window that was covered over and the door locked behind them, and they were kept in there with no light. And there was no records to say how long he'd been in there, how often he'd been in there.
Initially, Rachel Woolley had urged the school to follow a positive behaviour plan for Jake, a system of rewards that would discourage his more problematic behaviours. But she says this did not happen, and it became clear Jake was going backwards.
His deterioration was that he lost speech. His behaviour was out of control. I knew that something was going on because he would grab family members, mainly my sister actually, and lead her into one of the bedrooms, and he'd close her in a bedroom and pull the door shut and hold on to the door handle and not let her out. So I guess he was trying to tell me what was going on, but I, at the time, I didn't know why he was doing that. Sadly with me, it's Jake and Cooper can't talk. They can't come and tell me that something's happening to them at school. I can only tell from their behaviour, and Jake's behaviour was just terrible. He was, yeah, beside himself. He'd come home from school and shut himself in his room, and he was a really, it was a really, really sad little boy. Makes me sad. He'd shut himself. He would pull down his roller shutter in his bedroom and he'd turn the light off and he would go into his room and he'd sit there in the dark on his own. It was heartbreaking. He didn't want to go to school and he'd be crying. And I'd have to try and get him into the classroom, and I'd get him in the classroom and he'd hide under the desk and he'd go into the toilets and he'd hide in the toilets to get away. And he didn't want to be there.
The school Rachel Woolley's sons attended, Marnebeck, has been the subject of several legal actions. One by Rachel herself was a claim of indirect discrimination against Jake. It was initially through the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission, and then VCAT, the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal. She lost that case in a decision handed down in March.
The Education Department won the court case, but in saying that, they had, I think, three barristers and I don't know how many solicitors representing them, and I only had an advocate. I shouldn't say I had Julie Phillips, an advocate that did a wonderful job and represented me during it. But it wasn't for me about winning and losing. It was about getting it out there, having change, hearing what happened, and I believe that I already won.
Rachel felt vindicated because the room at the school she objected to, the timeout room, was, she says, dismantled.
They changed things, so they knew they did the wrong thing. I feel like I won because there was change and that's all I ever wanted.
Cases against Marnebeck, brought by two other parents, alleging inappropriate seclusion and restraint, are currently before the federal court. Marnebeck School declined a request for background briefing to visit. The Victorian Department of Education also declined an interview request, but in a statement said that a learning space that was sometimes used as a timeout area is now used as a maths room. I asked John Mooney from the Victorian Principals Association of Specialist Schools about the use of timeout rooms.
What about the use of timeout rooms? And at Marnebek, apparently there was one that was completely dark with the window covered up and the door locked from the outside.
I'm not in a position to comment on that. However, in terms of timeout, you might have an interview room where someone is really comfortable with the idea that that's where they go to work quietly and that you can keep them under observation, you know. That can be used very, very skillfully.
With those goals in mind, would you ever have here a room that had no window that could be seen out of and a locked door from outside and was completely dark?
The answer is no room like that exists here. I'm actually not going to comment any further on that.
To your way of thinking in a school...
I will say something, though. I think when I've seen arguments on aspects of management, I can see a breakdown in cooperation, all right? I have dealt with behavioural situations where I wasn't being very successful because there wasn't harmony existing between parent and staff.
John Mooney, the principal of Emerson School, a special school in the Melbourne suburb of Dandenong. At Kilberry Valley Primary, there's now another set of twins with severe autism. One of them, Corey, has a keen ear for aeroplanes.
What's your
one?
Plane.
Plane?
Can you hear it?
Plane.
Did you hear a plane?
Plane.
Oh, actually, give me some.
Yeah. Corey hears the planes
give
a lot.
Give me
some plane. He hears them much earlier than we do. Yeah. Always. Yeah.
Good boy. Lovely.
Corey West and his brother Bradley are 12 years old. Their mother, Tracy Hayes, has just emerged from a long and bitter battle with the Department of Education and her son's previous school, Monash Special Developmental School. Like the Woolley boys, Corey and Bradley qualify for a relatively high level of funding, which they take to whichever school they attend. But Tracy Hayes says that at the Monash Special School, the funding was put into a pool and not used to directly benefit the boys. This is a common complaint that Background Briefing has heard. Tracy Hayes says there was no transparency.
Now, I thought that that money was being spent on Corey and Bradley at the school of Monash SDS. It gets put into a global budget and they can't give you a breakdown of exactly how it is being spent. And I'm sure the taxpayer, at the end of the day, if you're looking at the big picture, would want to know, so I hope Mr. Joe Hockey's listening, or the Victorian government, that money is being spent directly on that child and how it is being spent.
A Victorian Auditor General's report in 2012 on special needs education found that the Education Department, quote, does not identify and monitor the achievement of educational and broader outcomes of students with special learning needs, and therefore does not know how effectively its policy and resource commitment is working.
Chair. Thank you.
Bradley, we're going to do our work first. Bradley, give me eyes. Look at the cards. Give me eyes.
Good boy.
Good boy.
Thank you.
Bradley, look at me. Can you give me ear? Good. Well done. Bradley, give me eyes. Look at the cards. He's really not looking yet. That's why we've changed the program,
yeah,
so that it's a definite choice because that's his go-to side,
yeah,
anything on that side.
Right.
So it's to make him think and stop, and that's why I'm holding his hand when I'm asking him to look at the cards so that it's not just an automatic reaction.
Bradley and Corey present a big challenge for Kilberry Valley Primary School. At this stage, they are less verbal than Jake and Cooper, the other twins, and they have been chronic absconders. They are met by two aides each in the car park every morning, and two aides stay with each boy all day.
Should we do our puzzle?
Puzzle, yeah.
Let's take out the pieces.
Puzzle.
Corey, take out the pieces.
Puzzle.
Over here. Good boy. Okay, Corey, show me the B. Where's our B?
B. Bee.
It's a ladybird. Let's do the bee.
Bee bird.
Where does the bee go?
Story. Ladybird.
Maybe. Good boy, Ladybird it was.
Corey and Bradley's mother, Tracy Hayes, says it's remarkable what can be done with better targeting of funds and a different approach.
No restraints, working damn bloody hard, rolling up their sleeves and working hard, it's a challenge. I'm not denying that it's not.
She acknowledges that there are teachers in special schools who also work very hard. But there's an enormous difference in the use of resources at the boys' current school and their previous one.
And if they compare those resources with their 10 children in their class and one assistant and Corey and Bradley who are getting two aides to one child, there's a big comparison. Imagine if you had that in Monash SDS, how much those children would learn.
Parent Tracy Hayes. Principal Neil Cunningham says Kilberry Valley Primary School is almost at capacity for high-needs students. He's just enrolled the 11th student with autism for next year. They'll all be starting in prep.
Yes, word is getting out, which is a little concern. If we continue to grow at the rate we have been growing, I would struggle to think that we would be able to service the students that we have and the way we do now. We've got 38 classrooms and I think 28 of them have funded students in it. So it's a high percentage and some of them grouped. But the severity of some of the students that we are getting seems to be increasing. That is definitely a concern in a mainstream setting.
Jake, how are you going? Having a good day?
Sports.
Sports.
Hoppe.
What have you done today?
Koyo. Mommy get games. Mommy get mommy get rap alcohol.
The majority of children with disabilities are in mainstream schools. There are questions about the accuracy of IQ testing, especially for children who don't speak. Many children haven't been assessed at all, so receive no funding. Others miss out or are underfunded. And schools are expected to accommodate that. A huge national data collection is underway, recommended by the Gonski Review of Education, to assess the numbers involved, the types of disabilities, and the educational supports needed. A survey is making its way around every school principal in Australia. The Office of the Federal Minister for Education, Christopher Pyne, says that until that data is in, there'll be no significant change to the existing funding arrangement, apart from an annual incremental increase. The final data is due later this year. In the meantime, whether or not a child receives an adequate education is a lottery, according to veteran advocate Rosemary Crossley.
There's an element of chance in this that really there shouldn't be. Depends what school you're lucky enough to go to, depends where your family lives, depends how pushy your parents are. Everybody should have access.
Rachel Woolley reckons her boys won that game of chance with their mainstream primary school.
They're different children. They really are. They had their struggles, absolutely, when they first started there. They had their struggles with them, but the school communicated, which is a huge thing, which I found I had no communication at their previous school.
She says her boys have made huge advances.
They can read and they can write and they're learning things that I can't believe, things that are trivial to other parents but to us are huge milestones. Cooper now knows how to tie a shoelace. And it's just not me being excited about it. It's the aides coming out going, Cooper can tie a shoelace, and getting the shoe and saying, show mum. And they're so excited and going to a concert and they're up on the stage and they're participating with the other children and going behind stage and seeing that, you know, they've got tears in the eyes, all the assistants, and they're just so proud themselves that what the boys are doing, and they care. They genuinely care and they're involved, whereas we haven't had that before.
How's their academic learning?
Honestly, their academic learning's blown me away. They want to be like the other children. They can do their times tables, they can read, read probably at maybe, I think, a prep or grade one level. They're in grade five, but before they went to the school, they couldn't read at all. And then today, when I went to the school with you, they were outside on their own playing with the other children, and I hadn't seen that. So I was really excited. And when I got home, I phoned my husband and I told him too, and he said to me, what, no one was there with them? And I said, well, we were watching them, but they hear the bell and they just go and line up now. And he was just as shocked as me. So my only thing that worries me is that we're running out of time at this school. So they're in grade five now. They've got grade six. And then we need to start looking for a high school, but there isn't any inclusive high schools like there is at Kilberry. And where do we go? What do I do with these children that don't fit in the box? Like, my children are severely autistic children, and I don't know where they go from here.
Mummy, it's a bag of mummy for a key. But he who does know, mummy will give a school a key for it. See you later. See you, recess.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research by Lawrence Bull. Technical production by Stephen Tilley. The executive producer is Chris Bullock, and I'm Anne Arnold.
If you want to follow Background Briefing on Twitter to get story updates and other news, the team's handle is @RNBBING.